I'm Lindsay Claiborne.
And I'm Mumu Shu, and you are listening to Beyond the Microscope.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back to Beyond the Microscope. Today's guest is Dr. Lindsay Miller. She's the Director of Materials Integration at Alphabet Energy. Lindsay, thanks so much for being here.
Thanks for having me.
I'm going to start with a really easy question. What does a Director of Materials Integration do?
That's a great question. Thanks for asking it. A Director of Materials Integration, I think it actually might be easier if I tell you a little bit about what Alphabet Energy does so that there's some context to what I do in my job. At Alphabet Energy, we build large-scale industrial power generation systems that use thermoelectric materials to convert waste heat into electricity. And so the thermoelectric materials are a class of material that when you put them in a temperature difference, so it's hot one side, cold on the other side, you generate a voltage, and so you can get electric power from that temperature difference. And the cool thing about thermoelectrics is that they are solid state, which means there's no moving parts. So it makes the maintenance very, very low, almost no maintenance at all for these kind of systems. And you can almost think about it like solar panels, except that instead of using sunlight as the input that generates electricity, you're using a temperature gradient. So in that context, what I do as Director of Materials Integration is work on the research and development for developing those thermoelectric materials. And then I work on how to scale them from lab benchtop scale to pilot production and eventually large-scale production. And in addition, once we make the materials, we still have to be able to integrate them into a package that can be sold as a product. And so I bridge the gap from the materials R&D to the package, if that makes sense in that context.
So how large are these systems that you're building or packaging?
That's a good question, too. The full system that we're selling as our first product is called the E1, and it fits inside of a shipping container. And so it's a very large system. However, it's very modular, just like solar panels are, where you can have a single module, which is basically several centimeters in area. And you can put many of those modules together to make an array. And we actually call the smallest component, we call it a power card. And you can assemble many power cards in an array to make a module, and you can assemble many modules to make a full system. And so it's very customizable for the application. The large systems can generate tens of kilowatts, and the small systems, if you just talk about a single module, it's on the order of 5 to 10 watts or so.
So what exactly would a small module be able to power in terms of normal things like a house or
a small module, the one that's on centimeter scale, is really more for one example actually, I guess, could be powering lights or powering charging up small electronic devices. Some of those kind of low power requirement systems. So most of what we would sell are products that are composed of many of those small modules, and then those something around the order of a kilowatt, because most of our customers are more industrial scale. So another example of something that many companies that work in thermoelectrics are interested in building modules that can go on automobiles to replace the alternator. So those would generate somewhere between several hundred watts to a kilowatt, something like that.
Have you noticed working in this field of renewable energy, that would be the right thing to call it, right?
I mean, yeah, it's not. Yeah.
It's sort of the hot new field or hot old field, whatever you want to call it.
yeah.
But hot. Is it hot? Yeah, well, okay, that too. That was not the pun I was going for, but I'll take that one too. Does it change? Does the industry, the market, the sort of tech change a lot?
I'm trying to think about how to answer that question. I mean, I would say in clean tech or renewable energy, the technology does change a lot because there's tons of new research coming out all the time. And there's a lot of young people in school and in grad school and a lot of professors who are interested on the academic side, doing research on the science behind all those things. And there's also a lot of new companies and startups, like the one that I work for, that are working to commercialize those academic advancements in science. So I think there's definitely a lot of quick progress, you know, from 10 years ago and 10 years from now, things look very different.
Just to go back and be a little bit nerdy about this area.
Moo-moo, nerdy? Never.
No, of course not. when you say you apply a temperature difference, where does that temperature difference come from?
The temperature difference comes from a hot surface and then either ambient air or a cold coolant fluid that's actively cooling the cold side. So an example would be on an engine, we would put our system in line with the hot exhaust. So the hot exhaust would go through, heat exchangers would pull the heat out, and so that makes the hot side of our device. And then the cold side can either be cooled by air or by a water-cooled loop or some other cooling fluid.
Ah, I see. Okay. My curiosity has been satiated.
Okay. I'm going to rewind a little bit now that we know sort of what you do as your job description. How did you wind up here in this field? Was it what you were aiming to do?
Yeah, I ended up in this field because in the end of college, when I was trying to figure out what I wanted to do next, it finally hit me one day. I was actually looking at a National Geographic article on wind energy. And this article on wind power was citing some professors at UC Berkeley. And it sort of just clicked for me then that I wanted to work on engineering for clean and renewable energy applications. And so that's what I went to grad school for. And that's now the field I work in.
If only it all worked that way.
Yeah.
What did you study in college then?
In college, I studied mechanical engineering. And I worked, I had some internships at NASA Glenn, so I did more research scale work there. And then I had an internship at Procter & Gamble, so I got to work at a large company and see what that was like. And after both of those experiences, I felt like neither one was quite what I wanted for my career. So going to grad school kind of opened up the option of working on the scientific side of startups for me.
Talk to me a little bit about startups. You know, we always think of research and science and engineering as either academic-based or big sort of industrial lab-based, or, you know, money coming from the government or grants or whatever. What is life like as a startup in the engineering field?
Well, we have to do research very fast. And I wouldn't say it's necessarily extremely cheap to do, but we have to spend the money carefully, and we have to think carefully about which questions we have to answer to get a good product and which questions we don't have to answer that can be left for people in academia to work on.
Is that easier or harder, you think?
I think it depends on your personality and what you like. I mean, there's definitely challenges. You know, working in academia, you work on really deep dive niche problems, and you work on them for a long time, and you need to understand at the most fundamental level what's going on and how to explain it. Research and development for a startup is sometimes not as deep as that. It depends on the problem, but often you work on a problem only for a month, and then it needs to be solved, and you work on the next problem. And so to move quickly like that, you both have to have a good team that you work with, and you have to already kind of know how to do research, unlike in grad school where you spend a few years figuring it out, how research works. And you also just have to know when you have enough information that you can stop and solve the problem.
So a few years ago, I remember seeing this graph. Bear with me, I'll get to a point at some point. So I remember seeing this graph about different countries' wind energy usage of wind turbine, wind turbines in their sort of grid. And in European countries, it was always steadily increasing. And in the United States, it sort of had this ebb and flow. It sort of had peaks and valleys, and it more or less coincided with different administrations in government. Do you, working at a company like Alphabet Energy, do you see trends or do you sort of see the impact of different administration policies in the work that you do?
That's a really good question. I would say in the types of industries that we're trying to sell, we are not depending on subsidies or other policies for the most part in order to sell our products. So we are trying, you know, we're striving for products that where the economics work out on their own and where there's purely an economic incentive for customers to adopt what we're selling. Of course, those wind turbine companies also, it was an economic incentive just made sweeter by the policies that were in place. And we're just trying to, you know, not depend on those types of policies. But I also think thermoelectrics is not a big enough field yet where there's been a proposal to have subsidies for this technology. If they were there, I'm sure we would use them.
Do you think at some point we might get there then? Do you think that this area is going to be growing rapidly? Or
I think the area where we could see subsidies affect thermoelectrics would be in if there were standards that were a little stricter for energy efficiency or fuel efficiency for engines, whether that's stationary engines or automobiles, if we had some, you know, regulations around that that pushes the companies to look to adopt new technologies like this.
What is it about this field or renewables or the sort of the whole thing on the whole, that made no sense. Like, what is it that interests you about it? Do you think you're sort of doing something good for science and engineering? Is it just fun? Do you find it interesting? What is it about it that keeps you engaged?
What keeps me engaged in this type of field and what drew me to work in renewable alternative energy is the complexity of the problem and, to me, sort of living in a way that conserves the amazing resources that we have on the planet. So I think there is definitely an element of feeling like it's the right way to push society. You know, I want a society that's sustainable, that's efficient, that has natural beauty, and where generations from now people can still live having the resources they need. Those things all matter to me. But it also is a very interesting field in terms of solving problems that are not just rooted in engineering, but also the economics and business side and the policy side and the, you know, the adoption of new infrastructure and technology. So it's a very interesting space to work in.
So you had mentioned, this is kind of an aside or tangential. There we go. This is tangential. You'd mentioned sort of automobiles and regulations. What is your take on the VW diesel
mess?
Yes.
Yeah. I think it's very startling, and I think it might lead to the EPA and other regulatory agencies examining the policies they have and the way they enforce those and the way they check to make sure companies are complying. So it could actually be a good thing in the end because it could create stricter standards and push things towards more efficiency.
I want to rewind way back because we were sort of teasing you about how people have their funny stories of how they got to where they are. Do you have an aha moment of when you said, I want to be an engineer or I want to do science? Or was it just sort of like the obvious thing for you to do?
I think with going towards science and engineering, that was something that was that I knew from when I was young. I love learning how things work and what makes things in nature behave the way they do. And so it was natural to gravitate towards science and engineering. I was also, though, interested in a lot of other topics. And so I started out college not knowing what I would major in for sure. But I decided to start with engineering classes because I figured it would be smoother to transition out of engineering if I didn't like it than to transition into it if I didn't like, say, you know, I was interested in English. I considered studying that. So I ended up liking engineering a lot, and that worked out well. But I think as a high school student, even though I knew I liked science and engineering, I didn't know what it meant to have a career in those fields or what that meant I would be doing. And it wasn't until I went to a kind of a day camp in my between junior and senior year of high school, and it was at the local university, and we every day talked with and toured the labs of different engineering disciplines. And it was during that tour, I think, that I realized that being an engineer is actually what I wanted.
And breaking things is really cool.
Yeah.
That's why I went into it.
Making things break and being able to build things and then break them and put them back together.
Yeah. It's kind of awesome. What sort of things in this area excite you, or what do you see happening in the next 5 to 10 years that are kind of the breakthrough moments?
Oh, I don't know how to answer that question. any particular way to
we'll
narrow
start
that
with
down?
Yourself. I mean, like, what are you seeing coming down the pipeline or that you're working on that just really sort of gets you excited, that you think this has got real potential or this is just fun?
Well,
is there anything?
In the context of Alphabet Energy, I think the next 5 years will be very exciting because we are basically, we've launched one product and poised to launch other products, and at the position where we're starting to scale to bigger and bigger sizes, and it's very exciting to think about having products in the market that are helping to recover heat that would otherwise be wasted and improving efficiency of engines around the world. I think that is very exciting, and that helps keep me motivated every day. I'm also excited about momentum of, or at least I have a sense that there is a momentum in our culture of equality in science and girls and minorities in science, and equality of pay and paying attention to diversity in the workplace. I think those things are all also very exciting and will move in a positive direction in the next 5 years.
Do you see at Alphabet or sort of in your interactions with other other engineers at other companies that there's an awareness then of being more inclusive, bringing in, you know, women, minorities, et cetera, to the workforce?
I think in a lot of the companies that have a lot of young people and young leaders, yes, definitely at my company, I think there's an awareness and people are thinking about that. I can't really speak for large companies. I haven't worked for one for a while, but from what I see of my peers, and my own working situation, I think there's, a lot of awareness growing, and it's in a really positive direction.
All right, here's a think question for you. If you could take time off from your job, not that you obviously want to, because it sounds like you want to go to work every day.
Yeah.
But if you could take time off from your job and either work on a particular project or take a class in something or study something or visit something, what is there something that you've been dying to do or wanting to do or think that would be just a really interesting addition to your sort of world that you work in?
Well, there's a huge list of things that I think are interesting and would love to at some point in my life dedicate more time to. Those range pretty dramatically from a friend and I were recently talking about trying to write a series of kids' books with kind of really cool girl characters doing exciting, adventurous things and things like that in the books. So that's one thing, project that would be interesting. I've never written a kids' book before, but I think it sounds like a cool project. Then on the other extreme, I'm really intrigued by a lot of the work going on in machine learning and would like to learn more about that. You know, I've done coding and optimization work in grad school, but I would that's something I would take a course in. I would really like that.
I know, that was a hard question. I'm sorry.
There's so many more things.
There's so many things. There's everything. Here's an easy question for you then. What is your day-to-day work like? What do you do? Do you sit at a computer all day? Or are you messing with mechanics all day? Or are you in meetings? What is your day-to-day job?
Day-to-day, I spend some time at a computer working on analyzing data and writing experiments or thinking about, you know, the direction that our research should go. And then I spend some portion of the day in the lab checking on experiments or running new experiments to, establish procedures for those and do some troubleshooting on machines, things like that. Some time looking at microscopes and doing characterization type of work. And then some part of the day is in meetings working with teammates, either sharing results or figuring out what our next steps should be and what our priorities should be, making sure everyone's on the same page about priorities. So it is, I really enjoy the role that I have because I get to do some lab work, some desk work data analysis, and some lots of working on teams.
Sounds like you have to shift mental gears quite a bit.
Yeah, definitely.
Hard, or is that sort of fun because it keeps you on your toes?
Both. I think, some of the fun stuff is switching mental gears from functioning just like an engineer in grad school, where I'm really thinking about the problems and how to isolate issues and get more data, and then switching to thinking about how to manage a team and what are the risk areas, how should we be de-risking those, like what can we do today to help mitigate risk in the future. So I enjoy that switching back and forth between immediate scientific thinking and more longer term strategy thinking.
I wanted to go back. You had mentioned that you had worked at NASA Glenn and at Procter & Gamble.
Yeah.
And then said that you realized that those two places or that those sorts of places weren't really a good fit for you
mm-hmm.
at the time. So what exactly was it about sort of this large company or a research center like NASA that wasn't sort of the good fit for you?
Yeah, I think at NASA Glenn, they do a lot of really great, exciting research there. And when I started working there, I still do want to be an astronaut. So it was my life dream to work at NASA. But what I found is that there's not as much teamwork, I guess, that gets done. It was too isolating for my preference. It was a lot of time alone in a lab running experiments. And while the scientific side of that is very wonderful, for my personality, I really thrive on the social interaction and teamwork that is required at a startup where you have to work with the product engineering team and the product managers, and you have to understand the marketing side, and you have to make sure that everyone that is helping run experiments on the R&D team is on the same page. There's a lot of teamwork that has to happen every day. So I really like that. And so for NASA, it was too much isolation. That may not be the case in every position there. I don't know, but the position I had when I was there, it was a lot of time alone in the lab. It actually made me question if I could be an engineer and be happy. And I'm really glad that I stuck with doing that because there's so many different types of work environments. And for some people, they like the solitude and freedom to think and explore new problems. That wasn't for me. And then for Procter & Gamble was also a very nice place to work. But I wasn't very excited about the applications, and I wasn't, I didn't have a feeling of, being able to control the direction that the work was going in. Of course, at such a huge company, especially as an entry-level engineer, there's a lot of people, many, many layers of people above you that make decisions about the direction that things should go. And so it left me feeling a little unempowered, I guess, even though it is a nice work environment there. But at the startup, pretty much anyone who has an interest can be involved in understanding the strategic direction and contributing thoughts to why we go in that direction. And you can always voice an opinion about how something should be done differently.
That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, it really, to me, highlights how many different engineering work environments there are. And, some people, there's so many different personalities. Some people are very social, some are very, very introverted and quieter. And there's work environments for engineers of all those different types where they can be happy.
If you, besides being an astronaut, okay, you can include astronaut, is there a dream job that you would want to have I mean, you can say astronaut because I think that might be your answer. But is yeah. there one like?
Yeah, I mean, astronaut would be the answer. But I actually feel really lucky right now because it's a pretty wonderful work environment right now. And, of course, you know, maybe in a dream job, Alphabet would be massively, making tons of money and we'd be scaled to a huge level and, you know, taking over the world.
Power generation on the moon, right? I
mean, yeah.
At this point.
Yeah. Or like, you know, a company with the sort of, culture and interesting problems and fast pace that Alphabet has. But you know, even bigger so that we can have a big impact.
So no big deal. Just, you know, living on the ISS, running a startup. I got
yes,
it. Cool.
Yes. That's actually a great idea. A startup in space.
Well, you heard it here first, but I'll let you start it. Go ahead. I'll do some PR for you.
Okay.
Well, Lindsay, thanks so much for joining us. It was really nice to have you on and thanks for sharing everything about what you're doing.
Thanks for having me. It was nice to talk with you.
Like our show? Find us on iTunes or at scopepodcast.com and follow us online on Facebook and Twitter at Scope Podcast. This is Mumu Shu
and Lindsay Claiborne.
Our theme music was composed by The Copycats. Thanks for listening.